Ambassador Paul Bremer is with us from Baghdad. Hello, Ambassador. How are you, sir?
How are you? Nice to be with you.
Thank you very much. We sure appreciate it. I know you're busy running a country, but we appreciate your time to chat with us on a couple of things. I want you to give us a perspective a little bit on a few things. Okay. First, we saw a really bad day, as you're aware, in Baghdad yesterday. And
right.
We saw people in the streets. The footage that I saw showed people in the streets throwing rocks at our soldiers, et cetera, et cetera. I heard reports that people are blaming us for it. Yet in the Iranian papers today, the Iranian government are actually blaming al-Qaeda. Can you tell us and give us some perspective on what happened yesterday? Because it didn't look good.
No, it was a very bad day. What's happening here is we are seeing the manifestation of the World War on Terrorism brought to Iraq with a bang. We know that al-Qaeda has been planning attacks and has conducted attacks like this, directed in particular at the Shia, trying to stir up a sectarian war between the Shia and the Sunni. And we had basically foreseen that they would probably try attacks during this holy Shia period, and we had met with the various governors and police of the Karbala in particular and Qadamiyah in Baghdad. But the problem is you have virtually a million people on the streets in Karbala yesterday, and there's no way you can search every one of them. These seem to have been suicide attacks using explosive belts and designed to kill as many people as they could.
They said that, at least I heard people on the street saying, that Muslims would never do this to Muslims. That's one reason why they were accusing us. Another reason they were accusing us is because we weren't providing enough security. Can you respond to both of those?
Yeah, well, if you look closely at what the members of the governing council here, the government said, they said good Muslims would never do this. They didn't say Muslims would. They just said good Muslims, just as good Christians wouldn't go out, you know, killing other Christians.
Right.
On the question of what we've done, as a matter of fact, I called the governors of Najaf, which is the other holy city, and Karbala to my office last week ago today, to go over the security preparations and to ask them if there was anything further they wanted us to do, and in the case of Najaf, there were a few things which we took care of. In the case of Karbala, actually, the governor was very satisfied with the preparations.
Explain, if you will, tell the story of the letter that we found that was basically begging al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden to help fuel a civil war. Can you tell us the story of this letter?
Yeah, this is a Jordanian terrorist named Zarqawi, who is connected to al-Qaeda and also was connected to the Saddam regime.
Oh, wait, hold it just a second. Wait. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ambassador. First, before you go on to the letter, tell me the connection. Because I still have people calling me and telling me that there are no connections. There was never any terrorism over there. You have John Kerry saying that Bush is creating terrorists by what we did over there. Tell me the connection to the Saddam regime.
Well, Zarqawi was operating in a group that had ties to the Mukhabarat, in Saddam's intelligence services. They were operating in the north of Iraq. He himself came to Baghdad a couple of years ago after being wounded in Afghanistan, and he had medical treatment in the hospitals here in Baghdad under the care of the Saddam government. But there's very clear intelligence of other connections between al-Qaeda and the Saddam regime going back a decade. There's really nobody contests that. You can talk about how deep it was and what, you know, various people knew about it, but there's no question that Saddam had connections with the terrorist groups.
Okay.
In the case of Zarqawi, we captured a letter which he had written to al-Qaeda giving his strategy and his analysis. And the good news is that he recognizes that time is against him. He said basically once democracy comes to Iraq, we have no pretext for attacking anymore. And he recognizes that the vast majority of Iraqi people do not support him. He says one place in the letter that sympathizers with us are among the Iraqis are as rare as red sulfur. And he then goes on to lay out his strategy for how to tackle the situation. And the way to tackle it is to attack the Shia, whom he considers to be the lowest form of mankind, and make it look like it's being done by Iraqi Sunnis so that he can set off a sectarian war here in Iraq. It's very clearly stated. And indeed, he takes credit for some 25 other bombings that have happened here since last summer. And so in this MO, the method of operation here that was used yesterday is very classical al-Qaeda kind of stuff.
You know, do you have any idea why? I mean, you have to be puzzled. Maybe you're not, because maybe you're not seeing it every day over here. Are you puzzled ever on why we're not hearing the good news here in the States? Why we're not, for instance, why we haven't focused on that particular letter? That seems amazing to me. It shows me, A, that we're winning. It shows me that the Iraqi people are behind us. It shows me that it is the enemy that we've all been looking for, that what the president was saying is actually happening. And yet we don't seem to focus on that. You don't really hear a lot of that. Do you ever, in the middle of the night, question that? And have you come up with any answers on why we're not seeing the good news?
Well, it is frustrating to us over here, because we have really got momentum behind the move to democracy now. We have got a lot of movement in the economy that is going well. We understand the nature of the threat we have, and there certainly is still a war going on here, but it's more and more a war against these professional terrorists. And I think what happens in the press is that a lot of times you don't write the story about the house that didn't burn down. You write the story about the house that's on fire. So, for example, we have completed something like 18,000 individual reconstruction projects here since last May. That's about an average of about 85 projects every day, 7 days a week for 10 months. Now, these are, many of them, small projects, rebuilding a school, putting doors on a hospital, putting a power generator into a municipal center, building a youth club somewhere, literally thousands of them. And every one of those is a good news story, and we don't get enough attention to them.
We're talking to Ambassador Paul Bremer from Baghdad on just some of the facts. But, you know, we're talking about the good news, and you say that you don't cover the house that didn't burn down. The Constitution is earth-shattering news. And
and
nobody really concentrated on that. You know what the spin was on the news channels that I was watching on this Constitution is that the Iraqi people don't even understand it. Well, if you understand the way our Constitution was put together, it is exactly the same story.
Well, you know, I've got polls here of Iraqis that show that if you ask them, are you in favor of freedom of speech, 98% will say yes. Are you in favor of freedom of assembly to demonstrate? 95% will say yes. If you ask them, are you in favor of other common freedoms, the freedom to strike and so forth, well into the 90s every time. So I think people who say they don't understand democracy are being a little bit condescending. These guys know what they're getting into, and in the Constitution that you referred to, it's really an interim Constitution, they have a very robust Bill of Rights that enshrines exactly those freedoms, the freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, absolute equality among all individuals, male, female, Shia, Sunni, Arab, and Kurd. The rule of law is supreme. The courts are independent of the judiciary, of the executive. It's a document which is revolutionary for Iraq and in many ways for this part of the world. And people who say, well, those Arabs don't understand democracy, they can never get it, I think it's basically cultural arrogance that leads people to say that. They're ready. Now, it's not going to be tidy.
Do they understand the sacrifice that it's going to – do they understand that security is going to be tough when you couple it with the freedoms? I mean, they're so used to their security – they understand that it's going to be a real dicey situation for a while as it settles down?
Obviously, they understand. Look, yesterday, if you do it on a population basis, it's as if 1,500 people were killed in the United States. It's half the number that were killed on September 11th. It's a big lot of people who got killed yesterday. And yet life goes on. And not only does it go on, but the pilgrims in Karbala pulled themselves together within 2 or 3 hours and went back to their worship. obviously it's a shocking thing to the country, as it would be in the United States if we lost 1,500 people in one day. We lost 3,000 on September 11th. But they understand the risks, and they, you know, they want to get on with their lives. They want to get their economy back. They want to send the kids to school. They want to live in peace. They want to have their jobs just like everybody.
Let me ask you this, Ambassador. You know, we're obviously in an election year, and America is debating which direction we go, whether we further these policies or change. John Kerry has come out and said that he would make this more of a police matter, that we wouldn't necessarily go after these regimes, per se. We would go and arrest the bad guys, like Osama bin Laden, and not really go after the regimes. He also has stated that he thinks that we need to apologize and do a little more compromise, et cetera, et cetera. What are the ramifications, sitting in the middle of the Middle East, what are the ramifications of that?
Well, I don't want to get into the political season here. I'm just trying to do my job for America. But I can say this. What we've done in Iraq is a great and noble thing. We have freed 25 million people from one of the most vicious tyrannies of the 20th century. And every day we get more information about the mass graves and the torture rooms and the rape rooms and the chemical weapons. I mean, it is an awful, awful regime that we threw out. And the Iraqis are grateful for it. And we're not going to be able to fight terrorism. We shouldn't decide that we're going to fight terrorism by waiting for terrorism to come to the United States. The terrorists are out here. This is where they've decided to fight the fight and do the battle with the West and with us, and this is where we have to win it.
Do you believe there's any weapons of mass destruction that we're going to find, or do you think that search is over? Do you believe that they went across the border?
Well, the search is certainly not over. I met just today another, as I do every week, with the fellows heading up the search. They've got, you know, leads to follow, and they'll continue that. And I think it's best just to wait and see what they find. We did find evidence of programs, of illegal programs, particularly in the area of missiles, that David Kay reported when he did his testimony a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
So there's no question that they were violating the resolution.
The average life of the regular schmo on the street in Iraq, you know, you get the impression here that they're living in constant fear. They're afraid to take their children out, that they don't have water, they don't have electricity. Is that what it's like?
That's the way it was, certainly back in right after the liberation, say in April and May. When I got here, we were generating in the entire country 300 megawatts of power. Which was less than 10% of what had been generated before the war. We are now generating more than was generated a year ago. We are above the pre-war levels. We're at about 4,400 megawatts, and we tend to get to 6,000 by the summer. The water is back at and above pre-war levels throughout the country. All of the hospitals are open, and medical care is back basically to pre-war levels.
Sir,
the economy is beginning to turn over. We still have very high unemployment, probably somewhere around 25%. But when liberation came, right after liberation, we think unemployment was about 60%. So it's moving in the right direction.
Ambassador Paul Bremer from Baghdad, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate all the time that you have given us today and all of the time that you have given America in your service. We certainly, certainly appreciate all the work you and your team is doing over in the Middle East and in Iraq. Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.